We're going to call the House Resources Committee to order. It is 1 o'clock. President, Representative Olson, Representative Seaton, we do not have a quorum to do business, nor was it our intention to do business. Having said that, House Resources, I almost gave us a judiciary, House Resources will stand in recess to the call of the chair. Would you please introduce yourself for the record and state your name and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Crystal Keeneman, staff to Representative Fairclough. Before us today, we have House Joint Resolution 26, which is urging the United States Congress to adequately fund land surveys in Alaska in order to issue patents to the state of Alaska and Alaska Native corporations. Currently, the United States Congress isn't sufficiently budgeting funds to the Bureau of Land Management. Therefore, we can't ensure the timely completion of land surveys in Alaska for land that has been promised to the Alaska Natives and the state of Alaska to be patented. And that, in a nutshell, is the resolution.
Thank you. Any questions of the sponsor, Representative Newman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And when I was talking to the aide to Representative Fairclough, I'd mentioned the state's interest in 2477 lands and issues that are also very important to the state, too, and asked maybe they'd look at that, maybe include this into their, if we could do that, too, because that's a pretty important issue to us.
2477 is the traditional right-of-ways that, for those of you that don't know, the traditional right-of-ways, and in theory, we have access to those, and we're having some difficulty proving what traditional is, and so the federal government and the state have had this ongoing battle, and I think that's very appropriate to put in there. I see the sponsors' aid writing feverishly. Any other questions of the sponsor? Is there anyone, Representative Newman?
No questions. Just if you were ready to move.
Well, we can't quite do that yet. Is there anyone online to testify? Thank you, Mr. Representative Newman. I appreciate it, but not yet. Is there anyone in the audience who'd like to testify? Seeing and hearing no one to testify on this bill, we will close public testimony. That brings HJR 26 back before the committee. Committee discussion. Representative Steve.
Mr. Chairman, from the previous discussion, were you putting forward a conceptual amendment to, was that a whereas?
It is not my intention to do so, but I think Representative Newman, if you would like to propose a conceptual amendment, I would certainly entertain that and appreciate that.
Mr. Chair, what I did is was suggested to the aide to include that. I don't know a lot of the complications in the language. I feel confident that the sponsor and her staff will do all they can to include that as this bill moves. Maybe have a CS for the floor. Or, I don't know. What's your suggestions on that?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, this is Crystal Keeneman, staff to Representative Fairclough. Co-Chair Newman, I will talk with my boss about that. I don't know that we would have any issues either before in the Rules Committee or over on the Senate side and then back for concurrence. That is definitely something that we can look at for you.
Thank you, and I think that is probably something that we would certainly like to look at. Any additional questions or comments of the sponsor? Representative Seaton.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'm just wanted to know whether procedurally, if we adopt a conceptual amendment for your topic now, it's incorporated. If we don't, it would have to have a Rules Committee hearing or an amendment on the floor, and I was just wanting to raise that question as to whether it's an important enough issue that it wants to be adopted or whether it's going would delay the bill if we tried to incorporate it before having a floor vote.
Representative Newman, and that is, once again, that's the co-chair's suggestion. So, Representative Newman, would you like to wait or go or whatever you'd like to do? How important is it to you, sir?
Mr. Chair, to me it was a suggestion to the sponsor to look at that to include further on down the road. I don't have anything prepared for that right now, but just wanted to make her aware of it, that it's a very critical issue, that it's very close to this issue.
Thank
you. So it's not my intent to put a conceptual amendment in.
Thank you, Representative Newman. Any other discussion to come before the committee? Hearing and seeing none, what would be the will of the committee? Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House Joint Resolution number 26/R from committee with any individual recommendations. Attached fiscal notes from committee.
Are there objections? Hearing and seeing none, HJR 26 passes from committee. With that, I would like everyone to stick around just a moment, but I am going to resource to a call of the chair. I'd like to do a little polling, find out when it's going to be convenient for us to meet again.
Right after session,
depending on the session. So if I'm going to call a recess, then to the call of the chair.
Testing.
Yeah. Squeeze was wide snow and everywhere that Mary went.
Okay.
The land. Resources meeting to order. President Representative Olson, Kawasaki, Seaton, Co-Chair Newman, myself, Representative Johnson, and before us, and Representative Tuck. And before us, we have House Bill 120.
Where'd he go?
I failed to see the sponsor.
he just
left. At ease. We're going to take a brief at ease. Call the meeting back to order. Before us is HB 120. And we've also been joined by Representative Wilson. Representative Newman, would you move the CS, please?
Sir, Mr. Chair.
Representative Newman.
I would like to move CS for House Bill number 120, version /E, for committee discussion.
Are there objections?
I'll object for discussion.
Okay. Representative Ramos, would you like to speak to the new CS?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, our hope is to come before the committee twice this week, today to offer an outline of the CS and have members have the opportunity to become familiar with the changes in this document, and then come back before the committee on Wednesday for a more thorough vetting of this piece of legislation. I will tell you briefly, and then I'll have Jane Pearson take you through the sponsor statement and the sectional analysis that this comes from our work with Harry Noah, who is the governor's point person and designee as an in-state gas pipeline coordinator. And in our conversations with members of the other body and the small legislative working group that is trying to assist the governor, and we think that this piece of legislation is very complementary to the governor's objectives in pursuing an in-state gas pipeline. And with that, I'd like to read you the sectional so that we can go along with it, and then have Jane take you through the sectional analysis. The sponsor statement, the sponsor statement is sets the House Bill 120. Sets the framework to define the project of an interstate natural gas pipeline and to recognize the governor's authority to designate a project manager, a position that has not yet been defined in statute. If you recall, under AGEA, there actually was a position created, which was the AGEA director, and that is Dr. Mark Myers. Although the governor has appointed Harry Noah as the project manager for an in-state gas pipeline, she did it in a press conference. She's not at this point done that in statute. So there is no formal statutorily approved position for an in-state gas pipeline coordinator, but we recognize Harry Noah in that capacity. The bill further authorizes ANGDA, under the direction of the governor and her appointed project manager, to apply for a right-of-way lease of state land and to assist in the acquisition of federal and state permits and authorizations required by the designated project that are necessary to build a pipeline. Harry Noah has articulated that this is his wish, that it would be too difficult for the DNR to be its own applicant and to apply to itself for permits for a bullet line. So his wish is that ANGDA be able to make an application for the right-of-way, but his preference is that ANGDA doesn't have the opportunity to go on a safari after they execute that specific task. So this brings ANGDA better under the direction of the governor and her project manager, Harry Noah. House Bill 120 also recognizes that the in-state natural gas pipeline will originally be a contract carrier. This is necessary to protect the capital investments of those companies that initially delineate gas into the in-state pipeline. At this point, although this is a relevant part of the bill, it's not an essential part of the bill. And we don't know whether the gas supply is going to come from Anadarko out of the Gubik fields or Doyon out of the Nenana Basin or Conoco or BP or Exxon. So this is fluid language. Contract carrier says that the line can initially be dedicated to one or several specific contract carriers. Presently, the transmission lines in Cook Inlet, as well as the TAPS line, are available to anybody who has gas or oil to put into it. But with a line this small, that's only 500 million cubic feet a day or smaller, it simply doesn't have the expansion, nor could it legally, for everybody to put their gas in there. So this articulates a way for the first entity to be able to contract for the capacity in that line. As House Bill 120 is written, the role of the RCA is limited to authorizing a person to own or operate interstate natural gas pipeline as a contract carrier, issuing a certificate of public convenience and necessity, and issuing a conditional certificate to an applicant that has not yet obtained financing or possession of firm transportation commitments. However, it is our belief that this portion of the bill can be amended at a later date when the composition of the pipeline is more clearly understood and defined. Again, we see this as an important developing idea, but not one that is absolutely critical to the advancement of the pipeline. House Bill 120 is an enhancement of the governor's authority and a solidification of a more narrowly defined role for ANGDA as set forth by the governor and her appointed project manager. The language in House Bill 120 requires the governor, through her project manager, to define the project, including the proposed route, determine the economic feasibility and probability of success of the project, identify permits and authorizations required for the project, and determine whether there are likely to be necessary commitments, to identify the person or persons who will design, construct, and operate the project, and develop a project plan for design and construction of the pipeline before designating the project. And all of this material comes specifically from Harry Noah's bullet points and his information, which is sanctioned by the governor. As this bill moves through the committee process, it is anticipated that either it will pick up a $9 million or $9.3 million fiscal note on this bill, because that's what Harry Noah has asked for, or an appropriations bill that will be added by the Finance Committee. Additionally, HB 120 maintains the flexibility to add specific intent language to assist in the furtherance of defining the project, the project manager, and the specific milestones that are to be met by June 2011, which is the date that has been identified as Harry Noah as the most critical date in the that would lead to the sanctioning of an in-state gas pipeline. So with that, I am available for questions, and then Jane is prepared to take you through the sectional analysis.
Thank you, Representative Lammers. Any questions of the sponsor before Representative Newman? Oh, before you get started, Representative Guttenberg joined us some time ago, so before, sorry for interrupting. Representative Newman.
No problem, Mr. Chair. We do have time. Representative Lammers, just for the benefit of the public listening, could you identify the differences between common carriers and contract lines and how they, the differences between those two vary in access?
Through the chair, Co-Chair Newman, the TAPS line is capable of carrying 2 million barrels of oil a day, and presently we're somewhere around 600 to 700,000 barrels a day. So as a common carrier line, anybody who finds oil can put oil into the TAPS line. They certainly will argue over the tariff, but the but as a common carrier line, it's available. The same is true with the transmission lines in the Cook Inlet. Because of the deliverability issues, there is space for companies to nominate their gas into that pipe as a common carrier line. It is anticipated that once a supply is secured with the small diameter line from the North Slope down into South Central, that any number of large producers could could take all the capacity in that pipeline, and that the risk accrues to the person who first delineates a field to bring gas into that, and that they should have the opportunity to recapture their capital investment, because as we know, it's a significant issue to find a supplier who has available gas that isn't working on the other project that is referred to in here by statute, which is the AGEA gas pipeline. And I can go into some other detail with the assistance of Mr. Bullock, and maybe Jane can enhance that, but again, it's not an essential part of this bill. This bill largely is the function of ANGDA, and the role that Harry Noah plays as the governor's appointed project manager, and the common carrier line, contract carrier line issue is one that can be fleshed out as we move forward.
Follow up, Representative Newman, is that it?
Well, there's a significant difference in there, but if you want to just work that along the way,
okay.
And if you feel that's a better appropriate way to do that, but there's some very significant issues here, but. I was willing to listen to the best way that you think it is to explain it.
Representative Newman, I think that the way the language in the bill says it's a common or contract carrier, and I think what it does is just puts flexibility to not close any doors but open some, and I think that's going to be up to Mr. Noah if this ever becomes to fruition.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And on the contract common carrier designation, my understanding is that all transmission lines that are within the state, intrastate lines, are by law common carriers. There's been some circumvention of that through the issuance of contracts. But is that, I'm trying to figure out exactly how that designation is. Is it just that currently in law, the RCO only has the ability to have intrastate lines being common carrier, and this provision would expand the RCA's right. jurisdiction? Or, I mean, is it simply a statutory change that we're needing to make?
Through the chair, I believe that is correct. And presently, the state only addresses common carrier lines. The state's never addressed, nor has the RCA addressed, a contract carrier line. It's not been relevant to the state's practices as of yet, but it's anticipated that it may be relevant with an in-state gas pipeline.
Yeah. Representative Seaton, follow up.
And I just wanted to get a clarification that the common carrier language follows from statute and not from a constitutional provision of resources or any other provision of the Constitution, and we're only dealing with a statutory provision that we're modifying.
But through the chair, that is my understanding.
And for the committee's information, we're trying to get to the drafter, Don Bullock, on the line. He'll be on in a moment, but at this point he is not. So, okay. Representative Olson?
Feel free.
What about the problem with the half a bee a day trigger in AGEA? Does this bill address that at all?
Through the chair, Representative Olson, excellent question. It remains one of the troubles that I had with the administration's in-state gas pipeline bill, as it talks about expansion and compression, and it's difficult to understand when the state is bringing its resources, which is the intent by involving DNR and ANGDA, then when the state assists, then the 500 million cubic foot a day rule is in place. So this House Bill 120 defines an in-state gas pipeline as a GIA legal. House Bill 163, arguably, I shouldn't talk about another piece of legislation, but that's one of the other problems, is it seems to address expansion and compression to take the line over 500 million cubic feet a day, and I don't think in statute that we should talk about breaking another statute. And this bill is conforming to a GIA.
Yeah, and just for the committee's information, Don Bullock is on the line. Representative Olson, you had a follow-up?
Yeah, just to follow up, are we putting the horse or the cart before the horse on this if we don't address the GIA trigger?
Through the chair, Representative Olson, I tried to draft a bill that was a GIA compliant because that's the law of the land. And so presently, House Bill 120 is an GIA compliant bill, if I understand your question correctly.
Representative Olson.
If we have a 22-inch line, we're not going to be a GIA compliant because we will have the capability of having more than half a B a day in a 22-inch line, unless I'm mistaken.
Through the chair, you come from oil country. I'm not going to dispute you on a 22-inch line. And it is a finer point than I would feel comfortable to offer. The line is going, although it has the capacity to be a 1.2 BCF a day line, the language in HB 120 calls out an AGEA compliant line of 500 million cubic feet a day, and I think it's I don't believe that there is certainty within the AGEA law that says whether if you don't go over the 500 million cubic feet a day and you design a line that has the capacity for more than 500 million cubic feet a day, whether you're in violation of a GIA. I don't think until you go over 500 million cubic feet a day that you have violated a GIA, even if the line has the capacity to go beyond 500 million cubic feet a day, and that certainly is the approach that we're taking.
Perhaps we get Don Bullock to address that when we get him on.
Yes, sir.
Now would be. I'm here. Do you want me to speak now?
Yeah, Don. If you'd identify yourself for the record, did you hear the questions?
For the record, my name is Donald Bullock. I'm one of your attorneys up in Legislative Legal.
Don, just hang on just a second. Representative Ramos.
Mr. Chair, I've got to go take up the death penalty and the initiative ballot. I have to go chair my committee. Will you excuse me and leave?
Well, I think we should probably recess until we can. No, I'm just kidding. Thank you, Representative Ramos. Thank you.
Call of the judiciary chair.
Call of the judiciary chair. Mr. Bullock, if you'd proceed. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Again, my name is Donald Bullock. I'm one of the attorneys in Legislative Legal Services, and I'm the drafter assigned to this bill, and I've also worked on AGEA. With regard to Representative Olson's question about the determination as to whether we're facing the possibility of a risk under 439440, which is the treble reimbursement for qualified expenditures if the state throws certain support behind a competing gas line. There's in this bill in Section 13, the governor's office has the responsibility for identifying an interstate pipeline project. And naturally, I expect that would be one of the concerns of the governor's office when they're designating a project is the risk of giving inducements to a pipeline that may be considered a competing natural gas pipeline. So that's one of the considerations they would make in designating the pipeline, which then would be receive the assistance from ANGDA under this bill. During consideration of AGEA, it was always a concern as to at what point would a gas line go over that half a B, and it's never really resolved. What it is more of a yellow light to the state to be very careful before giving any inducements that would result in a gas pipeline becoming a competing gas pipeline for the purposes of that penalty provision.
Does that answer Representative Gutenberg?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bullock, under the same heading of a GIA compliant, in Section 5, it changes the word natural gas from the North Slope to produce in the state. Isn't there a section in AGEA that deals with specifically North Slope gas?
Let me just, 1 second.
And by expanding this out to?
It, through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, AS 4390-440 again defines a competing natural gas pipeline project to mean a project designed to accommodate throughput of more than half a BCF a day of North Slope gas to market. So the inducements were to do things. It was to do two things. First of all, it was to ensure the economic viability of the license project, which is this big project. And the second thing is one of the ways it was going to do it was to make sure that there'd be enough gas to be put in that over the highway pipeline. But you're correct. I mean, the statute says North Slope gas to market. So between another production area of the state to market wouldn't be within that competing natural gas pipeline project definition. And again, North Slope is also defined as that part of the state that lies north of 68 degrees north latitude, and that's defined in AS 4390-900 for AGEA purposes.
Representative Olson.
Hi, Don. I can't see the map from here enough to figure out if Gubik is North Slope gas.
Through the chair, I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't have a map in front of me either.
Basically, just don't feel bad.
Representative, I've already promoted you to Representative, Don.
Please.
Please don't.
No. Yes, yeah.
You are from Juneau. sorry, that was a bad pun. as soon as you stop laughing,
Senator
Bullock, when you read that statute, just the design, and that was some of my concern when we had the bill in front of us, the original GIA, that if we have a 22-inch pipe that's only carrying somewhat less than half a B, the design capability of that, has there been any further discussion of that? I know we talked about it during the AGEA meetings. Has there been any further discussion about design versus capacity or design versus what's actually being carried? Has there been any effort to try to define that?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not aware of any. I am aware of during the when AGEA was put together, I think the administration did a study and estimated the in-state gas needs from an in-state pipeline, and they estimated it that was somewhere below the half a B. And so that figure was not based on what was anticipated to be a pipeline, but it was to allow room for an in-state gas line that would have a certain capacity to meet the anticipated demand. So it was more market-driven than it was, I think, necessarily a determination from the standpoint of how big, you know, what kind of expansion should you anticipate once a gas line might have been built.
Thank you, Don. Any other questions for Representative Seaton?
Thank you. And for Don Bullock, we've been talking earlier about contract carrier and common carrier, and I was wanting to get your take on the status of the law currently. My understanding is RCA only has the ability to regulate in-state lines as common carriers, and I'm wanting to know whether that's a statutory restriction or whether that flows from any constitutional provisions.
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, if you look at the bill, there are changes that are made to AS 3835, and that's the Alaska Pipeline Act. And in there, by statute, is a requirement that there be common carriers in current law. And RCA is required to regulate pipelines as common carriers. And what the difference is, there's a policy decision here on the common carrier aspect. Under the common carrier, people that have space in the pipeline to a certain amount of capacity would have the risk that their capacity may diminish as a new production field comes on and needs some place to put their gas. And so in the common carrier, it has to be open to all people that wish to transport gas. in the contract carrier situation, I kind of think about it, and then RCA will can clarify or correct, but it's like buying a warehouse. Say the five people go in and they buy a warehouse and they all get 20% of the warehouse, and they all contract for that. So that's their 20% whether they use it or not. And there's nobody that has a new need for something or a place to store things that could come in and say, you need to cut back and make room for me. In the common carrier situation, there is the risk that a certain capacity would be diminished to make room for a new player. So the contract carrier, the common carrier, I believe part of the policy was is to encourage the development of all Alaska's gas under our leases. But on the other hand, a contract carrier assures the people that do commit to a pipeline are going to have a place to put their gas, and it's something they can consider when they're deciding to make a commitment, considering their cost of production and the gas they'd have available, that they would have definitely an amount of pipeline space to put their production.
Representative Seaton.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Don, on that. I guess my I just wanted the legal clarification that the change we would be making or the current requirement for a common carrier is strictly statutory and doesn't flow from the Constitution and then implemented by the statute. Just wanted to be clear in our minds whether there is any constitutional flow through through the statute or the statute implementing a constitutional provision for common carrier.
Yeah, through the chair, the changes in the bill are statutory where it says common carriers were doing that. If there is a constitutional basis, I don't think it would be very strong, and it might be as to relating to whether we're fully developing Alaska's resources, where there might be some gas that wouldn't be able to be transported. But on the other hand, since the pipe has a fixed capacity, only so much of gas is going to go through it. So that kind of meters the amount of gas that would be transported. I think if there is a constitutional argument, I think it's a weak one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Don, would it also, do you not think that maybe the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution might come into play here?
First of all, I should say there isn't a lot of Alaska law experience in contract carriers, and there isn't a lot of law that I found in contract carriers in general. But I haven't seen a difference between a contract carrier necessarily and any other joint business enterprise. It's just like that warehouse where there is an industrial facility, a pipeline that is going to be transporting gas, and it's owned by one person who contracts with a certain number of people for the capacity. So it's more similar to another business. With several partners.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions for Representative Guttenberg?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Don, I got here late, so forgive me and the other members if I'm touching on something, but I heard the discussion about Gubik gas. But in Section 7, it defines the project as extending to Prudhoe Bay or from Prudhoe Bay. Thank you. It's pointed out to me. I might not have been on the microphone.
Okay.
There was earlier discussion about Gubik gas, which is in the foothills, Prudhoe Bay. But Section 7 on page 9 defines the project as extending from Prudhoe Bay. Is there a conflict there? If somebody came in with a project that started 100 miles south of Prudhoe, would this wording still require it to begin in Prudhoe Bay?
No, in this section, this is an amendment, I believe, to the Alaska Natural Gas Development Authority. And project is defined in the context of that authority to mean the underlined and the unbold language. And it specifically excludes the project that the governor would be designating as this other gas line. And on page 9, lines 7 and 8, it excludes the governor's project that's recommended under AS 4419037 from meaning a project that ANGDA would otherwise be dealing with.
Representative Edelman.
I'm not sure I'm reading it the same way, but I'll reserve comment.
Mr. Bullock, I'd like for you to qualify that. So basically, we're taking the project that the governor designates with whomever she designates as project coordinator will not be under ANGDA. Is that what I just heard you say?
Mr. Chairman, if you look at what this bill does is it changes ANGDA's responsibilities. ANGDA's generally responsible for getting North Slope gas to market. And this bill gives them a new responsibility, which is to assist in the development of this project that would be designated by the governor. And so that they're, if ANGDA was doing it, the project would be their statutory authority, North Slope to market. Since the governor's project could identify from any production place in the state to market, that it isn't necessarily the same thing as the ANGDA project. And ANGDA would be taking the lead on their project. Under the scheme of this bill, the governor designates this project, which is why that definition has changed, that it doesn't mean an ANGDA project, it means the governor's project. And that when ANGDA is assisting in the governor's project, they're assisting the governor's project. They're not working on ANGDA's project. And that definition section in Section 7 generally refers to a project that works that is ANGDA's own project. So it just says that ANGDA is going to have an additional responsibility. Initially they had statutory responsibility for an ANGDA project, which was North Slope to market. But now with these additions, project has a new meaning. It can mean, it doesn't mean just the ANGDA project anymore. The definition excludes the governor's project from definitions of the use of project generally in ANGDA statutes. I don't know how to say that more clearly.
Will this bill, if passed, would that have ANGDA doing two things, basically their original statutory obligations or responsibilities in addition to the governor's, or will the governor's take the place of ANGDA's old responsibilities or current responsibilities if this were to pass? I'm sure maybe the sponsor's representative can answer that, but what's your take on that?
Through the chair, my understanding of the intent of this bill is that it doesn't displace the ANGDA statutes that were enacted by initiative, that project. I mean, ANGDA could conceivably, I think, continue to look for a North Slope Gas South project. What this does is it gives ANGDA additional responsibilities to assist in the development of this project that would be identified by the governor.
Representative Seaton?
Thank you. So just for clarification, then that means that previously ANGDA could not participate in a project that was from the Copper River Basin or the Nenana Basin or some other field in the state, and this would allow them, if that is the governor's identified project, it would allow ANGDA to then participate in a Copper River Basin or Nenana Basin transmission line to market. Is that the effect of what this does?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Seaton, that's correct. If you look at the bill on page 8, section 5, section 5 amends AS 41-41010A, and you can see at the beginning in subsection A that it says there is established the Alaska Natural Gas Development Authority. And again, you know, looking at the language that's being added, you can see their present responsibility is the acquisition, conditioning, and North Slope Gas, designing the pipeline system, operating, design, constructing, operation of other facilities, and the acquisition natural gas market share. And then this new language is in addition to their responsibility. So they have their ongoing responsibility, and now they have this new responsibility and authority that's given by the language that's added here. And if you look at this, that glides back to what Representative Gutenberg was talking about in Section 7, which is the definition of project and how the governor's project is treated differently than what is expected to be the project from ANGDA under current law.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. Then, still on Section 5 here, and by the way, we have the CS that we're talking about, I presume. So,
Mr. Chairman, is that version E that you have?
Yes.
Okay.
Like on page on lines 15, 16, 17, we are eight. The change here is that ANGDA on page 8, section 5. The change here would allow ANGDA to be involved in more than one pipeline, not simply a single pipeline, and also the question on where it's putting "and" on line 17 before operation, did that significantly change? I'm trying to figure out what that change is there. Is that just grammatical, or is that substantive change, the putting "and operation" instead of operation comma?
Through the chair, though, we just corrected some of the language. There wasn't a substantive change in the language until you get to line 20.
Okay, and so there's not a change there, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Seaton.
There's not a change there from the number of pipelines that they can participate in. They could still participate then in a North Slope pipeline and another pipeline under this current, the way the current bill is drafted.
Yeah, through the chair, there's going to be a certain amount of just common sense in deciding the number of pipelines. I mean, the size of the market, the availability of the gas. At some point, there'll be identified a project that will take the gas available and deliver it to the market available. And the economics would filter out whether there is enough there for two pipelines or just one. The authority is still there, but I mean, it's an economic judgment as to which project to pursue.
Representative Seaton?
I just want clarification because, there are some gas wells in Cook Inlet that don't have a transmission line connecting to the distribution grid. And my reading of this would allow ANGDA to participate in a contract carry line to take those, whether that's, the North Fork unit or whether that's Red, which is in the hills there. If there was gas available, they could participate in the transmission line, not tied into the North Slope at all, under the language we're adopting here. Is that correct?
I think this picks up on the governor's bill that was intended to change some of the responsibilities of ANGDA from just a North Slope focus to more gas generally produced in the state.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess my question is this bill basically gives the governor complete authority to do pretty much what she deems is necessary to make that happen. On page 12, lines 23 through 28, am I right in that assumption or am I wrong?
To the chair, Representative Wilson, yes, but as I understand Section 13 of the bill, which is responsibilities of the governor, and this is a new section, 4419 has to do with responsibilities of the governor. The governor would basically do the evaluation of a proposed project and make all the determinations that are in Section 13 of this bill. And if it looks like a project is viable and should go forward, at that point she'd designate the project, and then ANGDA would come in at that point and assist in the development of the governor's project.
A follow-up?
Representative Wilson.
So it looks like that the governor can do whatever she finds necessary to determine the likelihood and success. And then once she decides that, all she has to do is provide written notice to the chair of the board of directors of the authority, and then after that, they go ahead. Is the legislature involved in this in any way at all?
Right now.
Yeah, but, I mean, other than that.
Don, go ahead.
Well, through the chair, Representative Wilson, looking at this bill, for example, and comparing it to AGEA, and AGEA, the state was putting money out there to assist in the development of the project. Under this scenario, the state's not putting any money out. What the state is offering is to have ANGDA apply for the right-of-ways and help with the other permits. But the project is going to be somebody else's commercial project. You know, somebody is going to say, we'd like to build a state pipeline. Governor, if you designate our project under this section, then ANGDA can help us. But I expect that there'd be appropriations to ANGDA for their assistance role. There may be appropriation required to the governor's office to make the determinations that are in Section 13. But at this point, other than the benefits of ANGDA's assistance, there isn't a money benefit that really goes to the person that's developing the pipeline.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Gutenberg.
Thank you. Mr. Bullock, in Section 8 on page 10, the new edition, number 11 on line 14, may authorize a person to own or operate an interstate gas line as a contract carrier. Was there anything in that that would either prohibit or be permissive for having the state being the owner?
You're talking about, excuse me, through the chair, you're looking at page 10,
page
line
10.
14,
yes.
15.
Number 11.
16, yeah. This is, again, these are responsibilities of the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, and this section gives them the authority to authorize a person or operate an intrastate gas pipeline as a contract carrier. The purpose of this section just says is that while RCA traditionally has regulated common carriers, that this section gives them the authority to authorize a person to own and operate an interstate pipeline as a contract carrier. It doesn't say anything about who the owner is. It's just that there's a new type of pipeline that RCA will take a look at.
And if I can follow up, Mr.
Representative Gutenberg.
And in Section 10, it goes on that the Commission may issue a Certificate of Public Convenience, until 23, is in the best interest of the state. Is in the best interest of the state defined someplace?
No, it's kind of a general concept. It's used often in the statutes that says, what's Alaska going to get out of it, and is it a good thing? I think that's pretty much what it comes down to.
Okay.
But part of the consideration in getting that, particularly like an identifiable project like this, would be the consideration, well, is there a better way to do it? I mean, what are the goals? What are the state's goals? What goal is in the best interest of the state? And will this do it?
Thank you. And if I may,
Representative Gutenberg, follow up.
And going on to Section 11, these all three have been RCA questions. A conditional certificate. It's allowing the RCA to give a conditional certificate, even though they haven't met the commitments to financing or firm commitments to transportation. Does this change RCA's authority or the broad range of spectrum of reasons why they would give a certificate?
You should ask the administration. This provision, I believe, is from the governor's right-of-way bill. And it was, I don't completely understand how it would work. When I looked at it before, it was similar to some of the discussions we had under AGEA, where DNR would issue two conditional right-of-way permits for competing lines, and then whoever actually built the line would be the one that at that point would get the actual right-of-way. And I think that this is something similar to that, that allows conditional permits to be issued, say, if there's two projects going at the same time.
Vindberg, I do expect the administration to weigh in on this at some point, so we're not, this is, we're just breaking the surface of this bill today.
Sometimes, sometimes it's good to define where Mr. Bullock's expertise is on a bill.
Yeah, Mr. Bullock.
Yeah, thank you. I have a question for you. In, on page 10, line 14, where it says, may authorize a person, and the classic definition of person is basically anything but a government body. So does this preclude the state from taking any ownership in any of this line if that was predetermined to lower capital cost? Would that preclude us from doing anything that might allow the state to own a part of this line?
Mr. Chairman, this doesn't say anything about what person may come before the RCA. This just says if a person comes before the RCA, whoever it is, that they can consider authorizing that person to operate as a contract carrier. This is merely within the duties. It does not have anything substantive to do with the power of the state to develop a pipeline.
Okay, so you're comfortable by saying person, you're not excluding the state from going in front of the RCA arguing this?
I wouldn't go that far without looking at the statutes and looking at the general definition of person in Title I.
Therein lies my question, Mr. Bullock, in that we will address at a later date. Representative Wilson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Don, on page 10, lines 27 through 31, I assume that's talking about if there's a failed open season?
One moment, please. Let me look at it again. Again, this is from another bill. Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I believe that's correct. It's like if the pipeline's still a good idea, it's not there yet, we don't want to kill it, but let's keep it going a little bit longer to see if things can fall into place. And if they do, then on the next page, on page 11, lines 7 and 9, then it's if the conditions are met, then it can go ahead. But I think it is to kind of keep it afloat to develop something that the commission, that the RCA would think is a good idea.
Follow-up, Representative Wilson.
That's it.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bullock, I just want to make sure I'm clear. When you, several times you keep referring to the governor's project. When we're talking about that, I'm going to go to page 8 on lines 20. It says, other than the project designated by the governor under 4419037. What is the governor's project under that statute?
Through the chair, section 13 of the bill introduces a new section into the powers of the governor that authorizes the governor to designate a project to go forward.
I'm sure you have a follow-up, Representative Newman.
I don't think that answered my question, Mr. Chair. So earlier when you were saying the governor's project, what project were you talking about? I mean, are we talking about a big pipeline, small bullet line here? What are you referring to as the governor's pipeline, the governor's project in earlier discussions?
The project I'm referring to is the project that would be designated by the governor under Section 13 of the bill, which is a new section, AS 4419037. It wouldn't really be the governor's project as much as, I mean, it really means the project that the governor has identified to go forward.
Representative Newman?
Okay, I guess we'll work on that one.
Okay.
So I just have a few more, Mr. Chair.
Help yourself, Mr.
When it talks about, like on page 4, section 4, we can work our way through, and on page throughout, lines 19 through 26, it talks about non-competitive right-of-way leases in development in the lands that they're on. Does the state generally enter into non-competitive lease sales, or is that done through best interest findings?
Through the chair, AS 3835, the chapter that's amended starting in on page 4, line 18, and for the next few sections, is the Alaska Right-of-Way Act. And that act, for the most part, was enacted in 1973 to facilitate the development of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. And what it did, it was designed to help the pipeline going forward, but for allowing non-competitive leases with certain carriers that met the requirements in that section. So it's generally, it's called the Alaska Right-of-Way Act. And it is applicable to the pipelines that are defined and described in that section 4 of the bill.
Representative Newman.
I'm just going to keep going down the line here. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to make sure I'm clear then. If we have a contract carrier line and there's possibly exclusive right-of-way issues, is that fully open accessible pipeline?
Through the chair, I'm not sure about openly accessible, but that is the issue between a contract carrier and a common carrier.
Yeah, it's, well, openly.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Openly accessible, that was a term we used quite a bit here last year on a lot of them. So I just want to make sure, and before you said that if there's five owners of a pipeline, then those five owners control the pipeline. Is it open access, say, if another company is drilling gas in Nenana and comes across gas and wants to put it in there? Is there room for expansion? How does all that work?
Through the chair, I think we're talking about two different things here. So the Pipeline Right-of-Way Act gives a pipeline a lease or a contract to run their pipeline across state land, and that's their lease. So it may be that lease is wide enough to allow another line to go through there, or for other purposes, maybe non-oil and gas purposes. It depends on how the lease may be written, and DNR can probably give you a lot more information about right-of-way leases in particular. So far as the pipeline itself, a single pipe, this gets into the issue of the contract carrier versus the common carrier. The common carrier would be open to new production, and existing owners would have to have their capacity cut back unless there was expansion, either through compression or for adding additional or larger pipe.
For the information of the committee, if there's further questions, I do intend to go till about 10 after, give us time to get out of here for the next committee. So if you do have additional questions, but I would like to wrap it up in the next 5 or 6 minutes. Representative Newman, I know you've just started down this road, but are you at a place where you have other questions?
Just one more question, and I'll yield to anybody else who wants to do it. On page 10, where Representative Wilson kind of hit on page lines 23 and 24, where it talks about the best interest in the state, best interest of the state. Has there been in statute any designation of best interest findings or how that's been established in the past?
Well, if you think about AGEA recently, there were a significant number of commitments that were required by somebody that submitted a license. And so the legislature can put in factors that they think would determine what the best interests of the state are by saying, when you're making that determination, at least make sure these things are there. As a matter of legislative policy, these are the factors that we believe are indicative of something that's in the best interest of the state.
Representative Newman?
And then that's decided by the commission and not the legislature in this proposal?
Right. Again, it's separation of the branch issues. You know, like you can authorize the Commissioner of Natural Resources to do something and then set the balance of that, but he has discretion as a member of the executive branch to actually carry out the law that would be enacted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? Representative Stephen.
Thank you. And I just wanted to pose this on Section 1. The prohibition on disposal of state land under A does not apply now to a contract carrier. I know there's some other sections in here that relate to right-of-ways, but is there anything in this section that prevents kind of a railroad lands style giving lands to a contract carrier that don't have anything to do with the right-of-way, that if we wanted to make them self-supporting or something, we could transfer 200,000 acres of land or other assets to the state, and then that would be kind of a funding mechanism for that? I just want to get a parameter around that, and if you're not ready to answer that right now, I can take it later, but I just wanted to pose the question, Mr. Chairman.
Through the chair, I think that would be helpful for the committee generally to read the recent Alaska Supreme Court case that had to do with the University of Lands. And there's quite a bit, and that's the case that came out in March. And it talks quite a bit about what's considered state lands and the laws that are applicable to state lands. And there's also the limitations of the Statehood Act as to what interests and lands the state could give up. Generally, the approach is by leasing or by providing for the disposal of land under the Alaska Land Act. And so that there are a lot significant limitations on what the state can do as far as transferring land ownership. And then you also run into dedicated funds issues if it's done wrong.
Thank you, Mr. Bullock. I think we're going to draw to a close. I encourage members to go through this, write down your questions. There seems to be a lot. Representative Seaton, before we close.
Mr. Chairman, did you want me to remove my objection?
Yes, so I would appreciate that. So that this would be, CS would be before us.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to remove my objection to the adoption of this as our working document.
Okay, are there any further objections? Seeing none, then version E, which is designated 26LSO523/E, Bullock 4309, has been adopted as our working document, and now that can be up on the internet and everyone can take a look at it. If there's no other business to come before the committee, we will stand in adjournment at 3:10.